Welcome to the CRE Exchange Podcast, where we deep dive into the global trends and challenges of CRE professionals across all sectors of the commercial real estate industry. We engage with experts in the space to bring you innovative insights into industry practices, opportunities, and challenges to better inform your decisions. This episode is brought to you by Altus Group, a global leader in asset and fund intelligence for commercial real estate.
All right. Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of CRE Exchange. I'm Cole Perry, your host and Associate Director of U.S. Research here at Altus Group, a leading provider of asset and fund intelligence. I'm joined by Omar Eltzreier, U.S. Director of Research. On this episode, we're excited to have another special guest, this time with our colleague, Sandy Prendergast from Altus Group. Sandy is a director on Altus Group's research team. With over 25 years of experience in the industry, Sandy brings an extensive knowledge of tax liabilities and changing legislations that impact North American commercial real estate. She specializes in valuation of various income-producing properties and actively contributes the expertise through panel discussions and research reports. With her MIMA designation and past presidency in the Institute of Municipal Assessors, Sandy is a respected figure in the field, and we are excited to dive into real property taxation with Sandy today. Sandy, welcome, and I'd love to turn it over to Omar to get us kicked off.
Sandy, it's really great to have you. Thanks for joining. Really excited to speak with you and dive into the inaugural U.S. Real Property Tax Benchmark Report that you recently released. But before we dive into your report and cover some of the findings, can you tell our listeners a bit about your background, your career path, and ultimately how you ended up as a director of research here at Altus?
Well, first off, thanks for having me on the podcast today. I'm really excited to be here. It's funny. It's one of the things in the property tax world. Everybody likes to talk about how they got into the business because it's not something that anyone has an ambition of being when they grow up. I majored in English in university, just, you know, thought that I would start working in property tax assessment to get the bills paid while I worked on my career as a famous novelist. Didn't work out that way. Started off in property assessment, working for the assessment authority. And then I went to work for one of the predecessor companies of Altus Group as a property tax consultant. Did that for more than 25 years. I'm based in Ontario, Canada, but did a little bit of work across Canada, helping to communicate some legislative changes, being aware of property tax development, did a little bit of work on a newsletter in our early days. And just in the last, I guess it was January of 2023, a role of Director of Tax Research was created. And I was really excited for the opportunity. So I now am responsible for property tax research in Canada and the US. So have learned a lot about many variations in property tax legislation and the commonalities across those two countries.
And I guess the background in English, I'm sure, prepped you well for reading things that you don't want to be reading initially and making sense of it. But hopefully, I know that you've stuck in this space, I know that you've developed quite a bit of expertise in making sense of a very complex world. But one of the reasons why we have you here today is really to talk about your recent report, the U.S. Real Property Tax Benchmark Report. Can you tell us a bit about this report and what was some of the motivation for writing this?
Sure. So I will say in my previous role as a property tax consultant, one of the things that I did frequently was prepare property tax estimates for clients who were looking to develop new property, as well as addressing concerns that they might have when a tenant would come to them and say, why are my taxes so high in this location as compared to this other location that we're in? I really was highly aware of how important it is to understand the differences in property tax rates and how they come about. And it was funny how often clients were surprised at the real differences that could occur between two jurisdictions. And certainly now that I'm becoming more aware of property tax systems in the US, it's amazingly fragmented. More than 1,700 property tax jurisdictions in the States. The range of variation in tax policy and how taxes are calculated is really massive. And it really is difficult to find information on tax rates in a lot of those jurisdictions because there's so many different factors that come into play. So really just wanted to provide a little bit of a guide. Can't cover all of the cities, but just kind of a bite-sized look at 10 major cities and doing a compare and contrast of property tax rates and assessments in those.
And it's maybe not crazy, but to think that everybody pays tax, right? Or all properties are subject to tax unless they have some sort of special consideration or reason not to be paying taxes. It's applicable to everybody. But also, if you're looking at it from a financial standpoint, it's absolutely a big consideration, right?
Yes. And, yeah. Yeah. As you say, property tax makes up on average about 40% of operating expenses for commercial properties in the U.S. and almost 25% of net operating income. Of course, it depends on what city you're in and what type of property, but that's average property across the U.S. So it's a huge, huge chunk, and it's the chunk that you do have some ability to manage. But unfortunately, it's often misunderstood. By the time you get your property tax bill and you think, holy smokes, this is too high, it's too late to do anything about it. So it really is important for property owners to understand the system and understand how to manage their property taxes, what to look for, and how they really can make sure that they're not paying more tax than they need to.
Sandy, you told us a little bit about the motivation in creating the report, but I'm curious, who's going to benefit from reading this particular report? How do you anticipate it being used?
I really think that anyone who works in commercial real estate or from property owners, managers, property accountants, really just to get an understanding of how the property tax system works, how property assessments can compare to market values, and what to look for, right? Where there might be opportunities to challenge property tax assessments and how to be aware of when there might be potential property tax increases in the future.
And I'm going to jump in just because I could see this also being an important topic and an important report from the investor standpoint as well, right? Because it's such a big line item, right? This is something that they would want to be aware of, and because it ultimately could impact returns, right?
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, one of the things that I'm looking at in this report is comparing property taxes to sale prices, which can give you a sense of where property taxes are about to increase, where they might be underassessed. Because one of the challenges is that property tax assessments aren't aligned with the market values. It's hard to know, unless you're tracking in it and doing this type of analysis, it's hard to know when those changes are happening, because it's not necessarily going to be when you expect it.
Sandy, you've talked about how important this is for folks and how big of a line item it is. Why hasn't this report been created before? Why are you the first one?
So really, there's just such a vast number of taxing jurisdictions in the states and just a wide array of statutes and policies that govern it. And a lot of analysis that's done in this space previously really deals with the data on an aggregated basis, looks at how much the total assessment base is and looks at average costs. But I had the advantage of the Reonomy data set, so was able to break it down by actual from the taxing jurisdiction down to the municipality and really down to the property level to segment it between property types within the city.
So you essentially took almost a bottoms up approach, going from the granular up to the metro or city or municipality level, and then were able to make observations off of that.
Yeah, exactly. I think one of the challenges is when you're looking at the total assessment base, it's difficult to extract, to differentiate between overall increases in total property value. So that can incorporate new construction, right? So it doesn't really capture the value change in each property over time. So that's one of the main differences.
Turning attention to the specific findings from the report, what are some of the key insights in terms of effective tax rates or any other metrics that you noticed and thought are worth calling out?
Sure. So what I looked at really were all of the different factors that impact the amount of tax that you pay. Number one, the market. Number two, assessments. So how assessors interpret the market. And then finally, tax rates. So we talked about the sale data that I was able to analyze from Reonomy. And then I also looked at market valuations from the NCREIF Odyssey Index and was able to correlate assessment and sales data in order to evaluate assessments in relation to the market. I was also able to identify from the Reonomy data some benchmark properties in each city and then look at benchmark tax rates per square foot so that we could compare those. And really, the key metric that I looked at was the effective tax rate. Because there are so many different factors that go into making up a tax bill, the effective tax rate really provides us with a common unit of measurement. So it's the same as if you get your tax bill and divide your total taxes by the market value of your property, that's the effective tax rate. It really simplifies all of those different millage rates and assessment factors and everything else, and is simply the rate that you would apply to your assessed fair market value to come up with a tax bill.
And were there differences between markets or any markets that kind of jumped out to you when you were looking at the effective tax rates?
Oh, for sure. What was really surprising is the median rate is just under 2%. And so that's a number that people will throw at all the time to say the average, you're trying to calculate your property taxes, well, assume 2%. But if you look at Chicago and New York City, their commercial rates are double that. Whereas the rest of the eight cities are within like 60 to 120% of the median. So there's a pretty close range. And then there's Chicago and New York City.
Along with the geographies, you're looking at different property types. Where was the division amongst property types?
Most cities or most of the cities that we looked at had one tax rate. So one tax rate that applies to all properties. And in those cases, there's usually a homestead exemption, a tax break. So there's a certain percentage of your home that isn't assessed. But in some of the cities that we looked at, they have a special tax rate for multifamily properties. So what that does is provide a little bit of a break or a significant break, depending on the city, for renters, because the taxes that are applied to multifamily properties will eventually be paid by the tenants. What I was surprised to see in New York is that the multifamily millage rate is the same as for residential, but the portion of market value that's taxed, so the assessment factor, is the same as for commercial. So the combined effect of those two is a double whammy of a higher tax rate and a higher factor. So for some reason, I hear that rent in New York City is high. Might be part of it.
And being an owner is more difficult, right? Or there's just a bigger tax burden.
Absolutely. Yes, you're really hit. If you're the owner of a multifamily property, you've got a higher tax burden and you may be limited in the amount of rent that you can charge to cover that. Definitely a concern there.
So Sandy, other than effective tax rates, what do you look at to compare and understand taxes and the impact on properties across different markets?
I think I've mentioned before, but just like using the Reonomy data to correlate the sales of properties in 2023 with the assessed values of those properties, I was able to calculate a property tax to sale ratio. And then comparing the property tax to sale ratio to the effective tax rate shows if a property is over or under assessed. So when I looked at the range of those tax to sale ratios, it gave me an indication of, for example, office properties in Chicago, that they were paying a much higher rate of taxes based on their selling prices than would have been indicated by the effective tax rate, and that they were paying a higher rate of taxes based on their sale prices than any of the other market sectors in that city. It's interesting, actually, because Strip Mall Guy posted on LinkedIn last week about a project that he was looking at acquiring in Cook County, and he was shocked that the taxes indicated a rate of 8%. And it was interesting because all of the commenters were really shocked that, you know, how could it be 8%? Surely you're looking at it wrong. Taxes are only 2%. But it's true. And it's interesting because in the report, if you look at in San Francisco, a similar situation, of course, because the sale prices have fallen so much, you're seeing a similar situation where the tax to sale ratio in San Francisco for office buildings is much, much higher than their 1.18% effective tax rate. But what's going to happen in San Francisco is that under Proposition 13, the assessments of those properties are going to be reduced to their sale price. And so their property taxes are going to right size. in Chicago a little bit different. They're currently assessed based on 2021 market values. They are reassessing this year, but it will be interesting to see if the Cook County assessor makes a similar kind of change.
So you mentioned a little about the differences across markets or some key standouts there, but what about across property types? Anything interesting?
Sure. So this is where the different tax rates really stand out. So when you think about an effective tax rate, that's the rate that's applied to the assessed fair market value. When you're looking at property costs per square foot, that's where you really account for not only the market, but also how the assessor addresses that market, and then also those tax rates. And that's where you can see that office in Washington, D.C. is paying, you know, $12.30 a square foot, whereas the warehouse is paying $2.30 a square foot in that same city. Or retail is in Washington, D.C. is paying $5.31 a square foot. So that's where you can really see those variations, even though that the tax rate that's being applied is the same.
And I could see the report's findings and that use of the tax cost per square foot being something that could be used for underwriting. It's an easy, not only metric to look at the relative comparison within a city across types, but then across cities. And I think that is absolutely one of the more kind of like practical elements, I think, of the report that could very much be used almost immediately. But I know the report has a lot of numbers. It actually has quite a bit of complexity just because the situation is complex. But you've been able to boil down quite substantially and really distill a lot of information here. But what would you consider to be either the biggest or some of the biggest takeaways from the report?
I think the biggest takeaway for me was really just looking at the disparities between the sale price and assessed fair market values, which is what we're seeing in the tax to sale ratios. What was interesting there is not only can you see where properties or property sectors look to be overassessed, but also where they're underassessed and where there's some potential for future tax increases that are well over and above the sort of annual increases that you might expect. So one of the things that I point out in the report is looking at the industrial warehouse sector in Dallas. And you could see from the tax to sale ratios that the ratio for those properties was quite low. And then lo and behold, you know, the 2024 assessments came out and there were 40 to 50% assessment increases for those properties. So it's definitely something to watch out for.
You know, there are areas where 2021 valuation data is being used. It's now 2024, quite a different market. And so are assessors taking this into account when they're in some of these regions?
That's part of a challenge, right? Because the legislation will generally require that the assessment reflect the valuation date, right? In those cases, when you're putting forward an appeal, you do need to reference the market conditions as of 2021. But if the fact circumstances have changed, or if a property is experiencing lower occupancy, that sort of thing, then you can certainly file an appeal and express that, but in 2021 terms, right? And based on using the rents as of 2021, cap rates as of 2021, but the physical circumstances experienced by the property. I will just say, whether the assessors recognize it or not, probably not in the first instance, but something definitely that a tax expert can assist with on an appeal.
This might be a basic question, but why is there such a long period between revaluations in certain cities?
Sometimes the argument that's made is that it's a massive undertaking to conduct a full revaluation of all properties in the city. Partly, there's a perception that an assessment update is going to increase taxes. A lot of times you'll hear proposed assessment reforms that involve freezing assessments at some point in the past. So it's really seen as this negative thing, because if we reassess, we'll have new values, the new values will be higher and taxes will go up. And really, the problem is that when that happens, you have outdated assessments. And so if there's a shift in the market between, and there always is some kind of a shift between older properties become less valuable, newer properties are more valuable. And so if you don't update that, then you really are penalizing the least valuable properties. It's definitely the more frequent revaluations occur, the more fair the assessment system and tax system is.
One thing that we've been seeing, where I've seen tax being brought up a lot recently, is around the topic of really a doom loop, right? An urban doom loop of how, if the values have changed, affects how much tax revenue is collected, which then affects kind of the overall health of the municipality. And that can turn into kind of this vicious cycle. I know you've written quite a bit on the doom loop and the tie-in with taxes. What are you seeing happening, and what are some of your high-level thoughts on the urban doom loop?
Sure. I did publish an article not that long ago about this, and I'm going to be publishing a series in the next couple of months about property taxes and perceived doom loops in different types of industries as well. But I honestly think in most jurisdictions, a decline in assessed values will actually help prevent a doom loop, because a property can't recover if it continues to pay higher tax costs than it should be. For example, it's interesting to look at what's happening in San Francisco, because there's a very good example of a massive decline in office values, but it's actually being reflected in the assessments because it's required to under Proposition 13. And so then what's happening is that those properties are now able to have a lower asking rent because their operating costs are significantly reduced. And when they're able to lower their asking rents and their operating costs, then they're able to attract more tenants. And when they attract more tenants, then there's more activity in the area, and that can lead to a revitalization. Honestly, you're not going to revitalize an area by overtaxing it. So number one, the talk about a doom loop assumes that the assessed values are going to decrease, which we haven't seen really yet for office properties, except in San Francisco. There's been a real challenge in communicating or for the assessors really to understand the decline in value that's happening, because they tend to base their values, or they do base their values, on transaction data. And the sales that are happening, they're often characterizing as distressed sales. And so they're completely disregarding that information. A lot of times the lease negotiations are incorporating now a lot of tenant incentives, free rent, improvements, and the assessors aren't capturing that either, right? They're looking at asking rents. They're looking at stabilized occupancy, or only the occupancy of the best properties, and only looking at transactions of properties that are the best performing properties. So it's going to be a while before we see the decline in assessed values that might lead to any kind of revenue issues for municipalities.
And I guess looking forward, and I don't know if doom loop's part of that, but what are some of your expectations or outlook that you have on U.S. property tax?
I think one of the concerns that I'm seeing, you get a sense that there's tax revolts brewing, just primarily because of the assessments of residential properties that have risen so quickly because of what's happened in the market. So I'm hoping that those assessments or that markets there will stabilize and take some of that pressure off, because I think that what that leads to is a lot of perhaps misguided legislative proposals where they talk about, you know, blanket freezes and caps on increases and that sort of thing, which always sound really good and they're an easy sell to people. But the challenge is all of those unintended consequences and how they really serve to keep taxes higher for those properties that are not increasing in value, to benefit those properties that are increasing. I also think there should, hopefully, I would see a move towards more frequent valuations, although that's not been something that's as palatable or politically popular. But honestly, it's becoming easier with the amount of data that's available and the technology that's available. It's becoming much easier to value a lot of properties quickly. And really, that would be the fairest outcome.
Do you have any recommendations for folks who are looking to address some of these problems or disparities in their portfolios?
Really, I think that the most important thing for property owners to do is to have a property tax management strategy that, particularly if you have multiple properties across many jurisdictions, property tax management software is a great way to manage that efficiently, to make sure that you don't miss any deadlines, that you're not missing any payments, that you're able to anticipate when changes are coming, and really to track appeals and results. Because often there's, again, a big disconnect between when those appeals are happening and when your tax bills need to be paid. So it's, and it can take over months or years. A system to keep track of all of that is a huge time saver and a money saver, I think. Again, retaining experts who are familiar with the relevant legislation, tax policy procedures, and case law in the jurisdiction. But absolutely, the most important thing, don't wait for the tax bill. Be aware of your property tax notice. Make sure that you adhere to those deadlines, that you're compliant with any information that's required.
Sandy, I want to thank you for joining us today. This has been some great insight into a topic that I don't think we cover on the podcast super often. Maybe we should. But as we sign off, can you tell us where folks can access that report and maybe find some of your other work if they're interested?
Oh, sure. Yeah, the report is available on our website, altusgroup.com. You can look at any property tax insights on the website as well, or follow me on LinkedIn.
Excellent. And I think we'll share the links to some of those in the show notes for our listeners. But I do think that's all we have the time today. To our listeners, your feedback is always appreciated. So I would encourage you to rate and comment on the show on your preferred podcast platform. Or feel free to send us an email. We'd love to hear from you. It's altusresearch@altusgroup.com. We'd love to know what topics you'd like covered on the program. But thank you guys for listening. And we look forward to having you on another episode of CRE Exchange. Have a good one.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to the CRE Exchange podcast, powered by Altus Group. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review and be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. This episode is brought to you by Altus Group, a global leader in asset and fund intelligence for commercial real estate. At Altus, we bring together capabilities across technology, analytics, valuations, tax, and development advisory services. We are guided by bold thinking, integrity, and inclusivity, partnering with CRE professionals to maximize opportunities with exceptional service experience. Find out more at altusgroup.com.